So we were talking about the other end of life, that was beginning of life. We'll talk about end of life. We were talking about brain death.
Dead.
Right? Always death, that's what we like to talk about in this class. So we're talking about brain death, and we discussed the UDDA, the Uniform Definition of Death Act, and we discussed how you diagnose brain death, right? So according to the Harvard Committee in 1968, and this was codified by the, I'll get the name, President's Commission for the Study of Ethical Problems in Medicine and Biomedical and Behavioral Research. Wow. Commission in 1981. This President's Commission argued that we should adopt, all jurisdictions should adopt the UDDA, which has two definitions of death, which is, the first one is the irreversible cessation of cardiopulmonary function, the heart and the lungs. The second is, get you the word, is the, the irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain. Let's actually put it up. Irreversible heart and lungs. Irreversible. It doesn't matter. The reason I'm putting up, let's see in a second. Cessation of all functions of the entire brain. Entire and all, the focus here. And we discussed how do you diagnose this according to Harvard Committee. You have irreversible unconsciousness. To the best of our knowledge, it's irreversible, right? No brainstem reflexes, which we talked about last time. And apnea, the inability to breathe, okay? So these are about the definitions, criteria, and tests for death. These are criteria, right? I walk into a room and I need to know, is the patient irreversibly unconscious? Nope. Does he have brainstem reflexes? Is he apneic? Apneic being having apnea. So, right? Okay? So those are the criteria. And what are the tests? I don't really care so much. But the tests will help me understand how to do them. How do I know if he's irreversibly unconscious?
Wait, you need all three.
All three, okay? This is options, right? This is UDDA. Is either here, need all three. Okay. So these are the criteria, and how do you test for it? I don't know, ask a doctor how you test for it. How do you tell he's apneic? We'll do a test, we'll find out. Question is, what's the definition? Why should this count? Why should this be defined as death? What are we arguing? Why? Tell me it is, but why? Anyone have any ideas? Why?
Is it really just connected to the first one? That if the heart and lungs are not working?
So these patients' heart and lungs are working. The heart's working. Apnea means you can't breathe. So you can't breathe on your own. So your lungs are not working, but your heart's working. So why should, give a reason. Why should this be death? Why should the irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain be death?
Because you can never come back to any normal state again, or even close to normal.
And if his pupils are, so let's say, okay, so, okay. Can't recover what? Normal, what function?
Not even normal function. People can live with that, you know, crappy functions. They just can't recover.
What function am I looking for?
Basic
what?
Taking care of yourself.
His heart's breathing. His heart's beating on its own. What kind of function am I looking for? Hmm? What?
Cognitive function.
Okay.
Well, are people who are comatose?
Your opinion.
Do we say that?
So people who are comatose have no cognitive function.
Well, they do. They're just...
Let's say he has no cognitive function. He's irreversibly unconscious. Patient's irreversibly unconscious. Are they dead?
No.
So you can't write cognitive here. Other options. What? Life-sustaining. I would argue that a heartbeat is life-sustaining.
It is.
So this patient has a heartbeat.
So if you took him off any kind of...
Right, so without the machine, he would die. But there are a lot of patients without a machine, they would die. They were breathing.
Okay.
It's hard, yeah. It's not easy. So from 1968, anyone have any other ideas? You have to be a little bit more abstract and philosophical. So
cannot live, period, as a normal person.
So you have a lot of patients who cannot live without artificial equipment. They're dead.
Yeah.
So Christopher Reeve, who couldn't live, we talk about Christopher Reeve, right? Christopher Reeve suffered his phrenic nerve.
He couldn't, his diaphragm was not connected to his brain, so he couldn't initiate a breath. So he had a diaphragmatic pacer put in to stimulate the diaphragm to contract, so he'd be able to breathe. So he was dead too. He would tell you, I don't think I'm dead. He could talk. I mean, I'm using a ridiculous example because it just to prove the point. So the President's Commission in 1981, from 1968 to 1981, we needed to develop a reason. What's the reason? So they said, well, what makes an organism as opposed to, we have a lot of organ systems in our body. What makes it one?
Control.
Right? So they said the brain is the source of all somatic integration.
This is the UDDA?
No, this is the President. This is the President's Commission. When they suggested the UDDA, they had to explain why. They wrote a book. So they said the source of all equals the brain. That's what makes a person, as opposed to a liver and a pancreas and an intestine.
But Christopher Reeves didn't have that.
He did. Let's just think. So you're right. But let's leave Christopher Reeves,
he's
a problem.
So okay.
Well, yes, for a bunch of reasons. But this is a problem for a lot of different reasons, this idea. So this is an equals definition. Just right? That's so we're clear. This is a definition. They said the brain is the source of all somatic integration. And that what makes us more than just a liver, a pancreas, and a kidney? We're a person. What makes us a person? Because they all work in concert together. If they all work in concert together, you're a person. So that's A. They all have to work in concert together to be a person. And the brain is what makes all these things work in concert together. So there's two assumptions. Right? This is the first assumption. The source of all somatic integration is the brain. And somatic integration equals a person. Right, more than just a collection of organs. Two assumptions, right? That was their argument. Okay.
Who was our?
The President's Commission for the study of ethical problems in medicine, biomedical, and behavioral research. President's Commission in 1981. Yeah.
A fetus would not be a person because I guess it doesn't have somatic.
So a fetus is very hard to know how a fetus would work into this, but it has the potential for recovery. It has the potential to have this in the future. This person never has the potential anymore because it's irreversible.
Wouldn't like dogs also plants have some sort of...
Yeah, okay, so you've been defined, yeah, so fine.
Okay.
So they would also be dead when their whole brain is dead. That's fine. Dogs die too. I don't think anyone has a problem with that, right? Dogs die. Not all dogs go to heaven.
All dogs
right? And whatever. So, okay, that was their argument. So the question is, are these both things true? You can argue, well, somatic integration equals a person, so okay, that's interesting. We can argue about that. So you can come up with a new definition. But it's not right or wrong, it's just a value judgment. If this is what makes a person, so then that's great. So what are the criteria for this? What would be the criteria? Let's assume this is the definition. What are the criteria? So they're trying to defend these criteria, right? Why are these... So this is the criteria for the President's Commission, right? They're adopting the 1968 Harvard Committee. This is the same... This is the definition. We had a criteria. This is the definition they gave for the criteria. So in your whole brain... All functions of the entire brain are gone, right? You have no more integration because the brain controls integration. So when all functions of the entire brain are gone, you have no integration. And so that the criteria explain the definition, right?
I'm sorry, I'm still a bit shaken. What exactly
somatic means has to do with the body. Bodily integration means that they're working all together.
So
that all parts of your body are working together in concert to promote your health.
Is that an exact...
No, it's an abstract idea.
Okay.
It's a definition. It's going to be an abstract idea. So they're going to say, well, that in the brain. The brain controls somatic integration. So when you have all functions of the entire brain stop, you no longer have somatic integration, and so you're dead. So this is the definition. This is a good criteria. Yeah? Any questions? It's important. This is a definition that somatic integration is what makes you alive or dead. And that's controlled by the brain. So in the brain, the whole brain stops. You don't have somatic integration, so you're dead. Okay?
What if somatic integration somehow stops?
Without the brain.
Is that possible?
No. But let's say somatic integration... So that's not possible. But you can have... Say the opposite.
What if the brain stops, if you still have somatic
integration? Yeah, what if you have somatic integration without a brain?
How?
So maybe...
Discuss with the heart. And the
so maybe... This isn't true. The source of all somatic integration is not the brain. Maybe that's not true.
Yeah.
Hmm?
What would it
Well, what is somatic integration? What are examples of somatic integration? What does it mean that your body systems are working together? So this is the President's Commission in 1981. Since 1981, they've tried to show that, so you have a brain dead patient, right? A brain dead patient should have no somatic integration, right? Yeah, because the brain dead patient has the irreversible deletion of all functions of the entire brain should have no somatic integration. So Dr. Schumann, he's a neurologist from UCLA who was once one of the staunch advocates of brain death, is now opposed to recognizing brain death as death, so it's interesting. So he tried to show there is still a lot of somatic integration. The liver, kidneys, and the cardiovascular and endocrine system all still work together in concert, right? The heart will pump more blood if you're stressed and less blood if you're not. The kidneys will filter the blood correctly, and the liver will secrete appropriate number of hormones. Elimination, detoxification, and recycling of cellular waste. He's just from his quoting from his, I'm just quoting him from his paper, right? That your kidneys and liver still integrate the amount of waste in your body, and they know how much is there and can get rid of it appropriately. Maintaining body temperature, right? Brain dead people, many of them maintain body temperature. What does maintain body temperature mean? I mean something very specific. So a lot of brain dead patients are cold when you touch them, right? They're not 37 degrees, they might be at 35, 34, right? But they maintain 35, 34, right? That means something's working, right? Otherwise, they should just keep dropping. For whatever reason, so normally our set point is at 37 degrees Celsius. And our body makes sure that we maintain around 37 degrees, right? So in a lot of these patients, the set point gets lowered to like 35, 34 maybe. But the body's still doing something to maintain 35. It's not just dropping off. So even if they feel cold, right, to us, because we're 37 and they might be 35, it doesn't mean they're not maintaining temperature, right? Wound healing. Brain dead patients can heal wounds. Fighting infections, developing fever in response to infections. Brain dead women can gestate a fetus. So her body systems are working together to, in an integrated way, to promote the life of that fetus.
So these are problems.
These are problems, right? And that you can grow growth, both physical, both proportional growth and sexual maturation of a child who's brain dead continue. This child grows both physically and sexually, like sexual characteristics, in the brain dead patient. So one of these is wrong, right? I mean, you could still say somatic integration is what makes it a person, right? That the lack of somatic integration means you're not a person, since these people have somatic integration in their life.
How can you refute the second one based on what you just said?
You could just say, okay, you're right. You can't refute it. You just say, you're right. I accept this, that the lack of somatic integration means you're dead. But these people aren't dead because they have somatic integration. Right?
So responses are...
So brain dead is not...
The response is that brain dead patients can maintain somatic integration. Which means that what? That we accept the definition, right? This accepts the definition. It accepts the definition. It says, you're right. Somatic integration is the definition of life, and these patients have it, so they're alive. Or you could say, well, if all functions of the entire brain stopped, and yet these patients still maintain somatic integration, so your criteria is wrong. Right? You say, which means that somatic integration is not entirely in the brain. So now we're debating criteria.
So for the first response, brain death is not death?
According to the first response, brain death is not death. According to the second response, it's also not death. But your criteria is wrong, too. You told me that it's a lack of somatic integration. And then you told me that when the brain is out, there's no somatic integration. That's not true. When the brain is out, there's still somatic integration. So what are you going to do? So brain dead patients continue to have somatic integration. That's unambiguous. So the problem is that either you accept the definition that they proposed, and then brain dead patients are alive, or you accept the definition that they proposed, and then your criteria is a mess. Your criteria doesn't work. You need new criteria, right? We accept the definition. They're alive, and your criteria is wrong, too. So, from 1981, took the President's Council on Bioethics, they shortened the name a lot, thankfully, in 2008 to come up with a new definition, to explain what's going on. So first of all, we have to know that no one ever checked for all functions of the entire brain. No one cares that it says all functions or the entire brain. No one ever cared that that's true. That's what the law says. We don't look for all functions of the entire brain, mainly because we don't know what all the functions of the entire brain are. Right? The brain is like a big... It's not like clearly delineated into compartments. So it's hard to know. So how do you respond to this? So there's a guy, Dr. Burnett, who said, no, it's not all functions, it's only the critical functions. He's going to say, no, not all, but critical functions. Right? So once I say critical functions, it means, wow, all those things, are they critical or not critical? Is wound healing critical? Is maintaining waste critical? Is gestating a fetus critical? I don't know. You can protect, bless you. We can say they're not, and then we're okay, right? So you could say that, but that's a little bit forced. That's like sort of deciding after the fact what I want to consider critical or not. I would have considered, you know, maintaining blood volume, like being maintained blood pressure is a critical function. Temperature is a critical function. So it's a little bit difficult when you say this is critical. It doesn't really help. So there's some people who say, so that's the President's Commission, which almost no one accepts as it was, and Dr. Burnett wants to change it a little bit, but it's completely forced. So there's some people who say, yeah. You know what? So this is Dr. Veach's approach called the higher brain death. So this is called, let's do a little bit more bioethics and we'll stop. This is called the whole brain death approach. Whole brain. Why is it called the whole brain? Because when the whole brain's out, we assume there's no somatic integration. That was the assumption. So it's just not true on so many levels. So there's something called the higher brain approach. There's one, there's two. I have a lot of ones already. Is the higher brain approach. Higher brain, what's the higher brain? Bless you. Anyone know what the higher brain is? Physically towards the top. Right? Controls consciousness. No. Right, they want to say anyone who's irreversibly unconscious is dead. Anyone have an opinion on that? If you're irreversibly unconscious, are you dead?
We should just accept that.
Yeah. That's an assumption. That's a different approach. This, not all functions. Just irreversible unconsciousness. Yeah. What's the problem with that?
I mean, isn't that the same thing? I don't know.
You could be breathing and be irreversibly unconscious.
And there are plenty of functions that are going on.
Yeah. No, they're redefining. There's a new definition. There's a new definition.
So right? not. So this definition does not have to fit in with
the somatic integration. Completely separate. Completely separate. Somatic integration is the whole brain. This is very not clear. One, this is two, we'll erase this two, so it's... Okay, this is a completely new definition. So, most people don't like this because you could be irreversibly unconscious and still breathing. Right? So according to this definition, so what do we normally do with dead people in this country? We bury them or we even cremate them if we're not Jewish. I don't think anyone would be comfortable cremating a breathing person because they're irreversibly unconscious. It's just...
Or
burying them, but I mean like... You know,
you're
actually
going
to
kill them then.
Right, I mean, you're killing them, and either right, but the burning has more of a graphic, it's more of like an imagery. No, because no one accepts this. This is ridiculous. This is crazy.
Woken up in middle there.
No. These people are really dead. Yeah.
He's probably still alive, but I think we should accept that.
We're going to cremate him?
Yeah.
He's breathing.
But he's never going to wake up.
Oh but he's God. Alive. So you're not killing him, you're saying he's dead. He's breathing, his heart's beating, he's irreversibly conscious.
But he's never going to wake up again.
You're right, there are a lot of people that are going to wake up again.
He might as well be dead.
He might as well be dead. Well, we could argue about that, but he's certainly not dead.
I'd rather not be the one that killed him.
That's a different story. Meaning, if he's just as good as dead, it doesn't mean he is dead, first of all. So the question is he just as good as dead a valid theory? Meaning, do I have the right to say this person's life isn't worth living?
His brain is dead.
That's parts of his brain are dead. Not all parts.
We say that
parts of his brain are dead.
We say that that's the only thing that matters. If you
could.
So if you say that, then it's fine.
So what if a person is mentally disabled and only part of their brain is dead and they're not able to, like, you know, they have damage?
Well, I won't say.
Why not?
Because it's not on the same level as this.
You're right, but what's the difference, really?
Where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line?
Well, I'll draw the line there.
You're comfortable drawing the line there. And you can see that someone's being like, well, if you have an IQ less than something, then you're dead too. I mean, you see why this is a little bit scary.
I mean, it is, but I think it's alright.
It's a little bit scary because if you can't justify where you're going to draw the line,
because maybe it's
that means putting a line
in society is better off if we just say that.
That's a different question. Are they dead or not? I mean,
from
an American law perspective,
why don't you say something like this? Oh, the body is still there, and, you know, it's not, like,
okay,
being eaten by worms, therefore he's still alive.
You could say that. That's one approach.
So I'm saying he's dead here.
That's one approach. I understand. That's one approach. There's another approach. This person's breathing, and his heart's beating, and he looks like he's asleep. We can kill him.
It's
not irreversible.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Fine. Okay, you don't have to have a definition off the bat. We have to refine it. That's okay. You need to be irreversible. Irreversibly
sick. Yeah.
So most people are uncomfortable with the fact that taking a breathing person and just burning them. But we don't generally tend not to do that. Most people think it goes against common sense, which is not an argument, because what does that mean? That means my common sense says and your common sense says no. So that's not a real argument, but most people are very uncomfortable. It's against what our intuition of being alive means. Being alive means breathing and having a heartbeat. Maybe. At least one of the two. And these patients are both. And just thinking of fetus, that person's dead too? It's hard. Okay, so that's the higher death brain death approach. People don't really like it so much, because it's, especially because of the slippery slope, but just where are you going to draw that line, and how are you going to justify drawing a line in a certain place? So the President's Council in 2008 has a new definition, visual secular bioethics. We didn't mention halakha. Halakha doesn't have its own definitions, but this is just fascinating, I think. Maybe you don't. So that's two, this is three. The President's Council thinks that it's about, how do they say it? They have a very interesting phrase. It's all about self-preservation. Sorry, it's the drive for self-preservation. So as long as a person has an inner drive.
How on earth do you find that?
Okay, so when you make, this is a definition, it's abstract. So, has an inner drive for self-preservation, they're alive. Okay. Fine. Interesting. How do they want, so what are the criteria that meet this definition, they say? Irreversibly unconscious, so the drive of self-preservation means, at the very least, interacting with your environment at some level. Right? So they say, okay, so it needs to be irreversibly unconscious.
Unconscious.
Okay. Irreversibly unconscious and, ironically or not, or coincidentally, apneic. Hey, that's exactly the same thing that they said, right? So we maintain the status quo, but we completely redefine what it means to be dead. So you have to wonder how coincidental this was. They say, why? Well, the person's irreversibly unconscious can't interact with the world, but his body's still interacting with the world, he's breathing. So if a person has no drive to breathe, they're not interacting with the environment at all, they're dead. If you have no way to interact with the world in any way to preserve yourself, you're dead. That was their definition. And coincidentally, or not coincidentally, it's exactly what the Harvard Committee said in 1968, although it has a completely different definition of what it means to be dead. So a lot of people got upset at them for this. They argued that it's not a very honest attempt to come up with a new definition, meaning once the whole brain definition was tagged as being not true, so you think you come up with a new definition and come up with new criteria and new testing and see. Now that coincidentally it should all work out just the same, it doesn't make a difference, we have a philosophical discussion, that's it. So some people got a little bit upset at this for that reason, that it wasn't terribly honest. You could argue that, I'm not judging them with motivation.
It's like asking them to make stuff up as you go.
They are making stuff up as they go, they're justifying something post facto. They justified what existed post facto.
No.
Now, you could say they would have come to the same conclusion had they do it.
They
would have. Could have. I'm not judging them. So some people got upset that they said, well, wait a minute. Irreversible unconsciousness, according to this definition, is not dead. And apnea, according to this definition, is not dead. Alone. So why, pray tell, when you put them together, is the person dead? Neither is sufficient. So that was one attack. So you can mitigate that a little bit.
Yeah, that's not.
Right, because you say, well, if you stop breathing alone, your heart's beating, you're not dead.
And if your heart's beating, you're not breathing, you're out dead. So why would we put them together? You're dead. Because, yeah, okay, dead. Because you're dead.
But that's how a lot of things are.
Right.
You just fill certain criteria.
But it's why. No, you're right. But we're trying to give a why. You have to give a reason. Why do these two things mean this? If neither one of them constitutes it in itself, why would they come together and doesn't meet the definition? That I understand. That's already more, it's hard to say. So, and the whole, you can read it, you can go, if you go to bioethics.gov, you can download the PDF. It used to be when, a shout out to President Bush's bioethics commission, committee, under his bioethics committee, you could actually order the book and they would send it to you for free, which is kind of nice. They stopped doing that. But you can still get the PDF for free if you go to bioethics.gov. And you can read it. It's like 100 something pages. Really interesting. It's really weird because they say, well, the person's dead, but his body's still alive. Or you can't really talk about the health of a cadaver, but something like health exists in this cadaver. But what in the world does that mean? That's a meaningless phrase. That means we're making up words as we go along to accommodate our new definition. But you're trying to define it in the way that we think. It's very strict. Okay, whatever. That's the President's Council's definition. Argument, you can like it, not like it. It's a little bit strange and overly coincidental. But fine. So that's how it works in bioethics. Yes, questions on bioethics?
Yeah, it seems like assumptions will only go so far as the science would take. I mean, people want a very precise definite answer for a phenomenon we don't really understand. Why can't we just arbitrarily set lines somewhere where we think we know what's going on? We can't give a perfect answer.
No, give me a definition. What does it mean? And then I'll find the criteria to meet it. This is an argument. This is arguing in definition. The question is why. So, okay, this is how this works in outside of the classroom, like in the secular world. So most doctors have no idea that these things are going on. This is more of a philosophical discussion. But many people are now. Many bioethicists are coming out and saying, well, they're adopting more of a higher brain definition of death, which is a little bit scary. They're saying, yeah, we would acknowledge that from a bioethical perspective, these brain dead patients are not necessarily dead, but we should take the organs anyway. And we should take the organs of people who are permanently unconscious. And maybe we should take the organs of patients who have end-stage dementia. And maybe we should take the organs of a lot more other people that make us more uncomfortable to have this conversation, of people who are not completely dead according to any definition, but we can kill them anyway, because killing, so they want to say, well, killing means taking away someone's personhood, so if they don't have personhood, so then we can kill them.
But death is uncomfortable.
That makes sense.
Right, so the problem, it's a very utilitarian approach. So if I can kill one person, take eight organs out, and save eight people, so even if he's living and breathing and talking, I should do it.
No, wait
a second. We're being utilitarian. I'll sacrifice one, and I'll save eight.
But it's not the same.
You have to draw the lines where that guy
is. Okay, so we're drawing the line, arbitrary reason. The question is why?
He's alive.
Okay.
So he's not alive.
I understand. So, but now you're just making a circle. You're saying, therefore he's dead, and therefore I can take his organs. So you have to tell me why he's dead.
This person is alive, and just not
useful. You're saying, fine. So you're making a judgment that certain lives aren't worth living.
Yep.
And therefore I have a right to end that life.
That's not good. No, but they would.
It's their wishes.
Yeah.
But you can't choose to end your life. That's actually illegal, right? That's called suicide. Were you saying at a certain point suicide should be illegal?
No, but this comes back to what we said before, like how can you take away a treatment? Like,
right, okay. Same idea.
It is killing them, it is, but
okay.
It's okay.
So that's what some people want to argue. So that's what these guys, Truog and Miller, are saying. Wait a minute, he goes, this is all a sham. The brain death business is not death, because all functions of the entire brain, that's a joke. Brain dead patients, many of them maintain thermoregulation, many of them secrete ADH or arginine vasopressin, it's maintaining their blood volume. This is a joke. But, what's the big deal? Anyway, we should be taking their life and ending it because that makes sense. It's not really killing them. And he says it's no different that they make this explicit. And when you shut off someone's ventilator and he dies after, I didn't kill. Of course I killed him. I was the proximate cause of his death. So what's the difference shutting off a ventilator or taking out his heart?
So what's the bottom line? What do people in America follow?
Philosophically? We don't know. The law does not. This is the law. The law says this. Why does the law say this is the question? And should it be true or not is the question. The law says this. The law says that the law says irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain. That's what the law actually says.
It still says that?
Yeah. The law in most jurisdictions says all functions of the entire brain. No one follows that. We say irreversible unconsciousness, no brainstem reflexes and apnea is death if it's done 12 hours apart. You have to do it twice. Why twice? Just to make sure that nothing came back. No, because how do you know it's irreversible? Right now, he doesn't have any of those things. Hey, you know it's irreversible? So you do it again 12 hours later. If it doesn't come back, you assume it's irreversible. So the law says this. Most places, jurisdictions adopt these criteria. The question is why? The law doesn't give you a why. The law gives you what? We're trying to figure philosophically. What philosophical approach does most people have? I think most people aren't philosophical. Yeah.
I was going to ask, so is there any, basically we said there's no difference between that and what we had originally. Why, what was our issue with our original, why did we try to change the definition originally? I forget already.
To the, why did the Harvard, why did they change?
Why weren't we satisfied
with the whole brain integration? No, so these three things, what do they represent? If they represent this, somatic integration, that's not true. Somatic integration continues in brain dead patients. So either brain dead patients have somatic integration and they're not dead, or death of the entire brain has nothing to do, right? Either.
You said the somatic integration doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so that's why we're going to keep this as the law. We just have to explain why. Right? So you're saying, well, if I can't explain why, I should change the law. Okay, maybe. But things don't work that way. So this is the law. Okay? Any questions on the law? That's how, so the law is, it's death. The question is why, and I think most people never thought about it. Most doctors who I've encountered have never thought about this at all. They're completely unaware that there's even discussion about it. They're like, well, the person's dead. Usually having the assumption that this is a fact, not a value judgment, meaning it's a fact that the law says that. That's not questionable. But that the law has an opinion, meaning, and other people could legitimately disagree with that opinion. What we should do is a different question, because the law says one thing. So how do I deal with the fact that someone may have a different opinion than the law? That's a different question. But to recognize that this is a question of an opinion, and it's a value judgment, then the law has one opinion, one value judgment, and people may differ about it. Now, how do you, what to do about that? Like I said, different. But most doctors think, no, it's a fact, and this person's dead. What do you mean? Of course he's dead. He's dead. That's not an argument, just repeating the same word again. But most people say, well, his brain's dead, so he's dead. Well, that's why. Because his brain's dead. That's not an explanation, that's just repeating a statement. So you have to give one of these, you can come up with a new definition, that's fine. You're not limited to these options. But that's generally the, not, I'm not going through every single approach, but these are generally the three larger approaches out there. Yeah.
What would you have to be?
I don't know.
You're the surgeon general.
What's best public policy? So Dr. Burnett, who argues for the whole brain approach, he goes, look, he's still alive. He says, look, I understand that people don't like it, and I understand that there are questions about it, but it's good public policy, so that's a good reason. So that's a little bit scary. It's good public policy, so I agree they're alive, but we'll kill them anyway. So your approach might be, you're entitled to it, but it's not the law, right? He's saying they're actually alive, we can kill them anyway, which is against the law. So far, you have to change the law. You, according to your approach, you have to change the law. So far, the law says you can't kill living people, no matter what.
No, it's like, this is plethora of laws. Like, you are.
You have to change the law. So change the law. The law doesn't say what you're suggesting.
The law just ignores the reality. The law just doesn't, changes all the phrases and says, no, this is not a case of killing, this person is dead. Even though.
Either the person's dead or alive, but if he's alive, you can't kill him. So either change what it means to be dead, or say I can kill him. But so far, you can't kill living people. You want to change that, so go and lobby and advocate. I hope you fail. But that's okay. We're entitled to different approaches. That's okay. And I don't think you're going to get very far saying we should kill living people. I don't think that's going to be a good policy decision. I don't think any of the candidates will endorse that position for next year's election. But all power to you. But so far, that's not the law. So for Dr. Burnett to say it's good public policy, you know, even though they're alive, it's a little bit shiesty. Okay, fine. Let's talk about halacha. What should define death in halacha? Right? Halacha does not necessarily care about any of these bioethicists. We've existed far before the bioethicists.
Chazal knows better than
they. I didn't say they know better, but we certainly had a definition well before they came along. Right? We agree. The Chazal Sofer points out, the Torah says you have to bury somebody quickly. Right? We know that, right? The mitzvah of kavuru. It must be that there's a definition of death. Otherwise, what does quickly mean? Quickly from when? It must be that there's a halachic tradition, wherever it comes from, of what death is. Right? Otherwise, this makes no sense, right? How can you have a mitzvah to bury somebody quickly if we don't know what death means?
Unless the Chazal Sofer is assuming it's just some common knowledge.
Okay. There's got to be something.
Meaning, I said that wrong. Unless he's assuming that it's something that each person is just going to judge by, you know, the circumstance that he's.
It's going to be hard. But it's an objective mitzvah to do it quickly. Quickly from what?
It's objective mitzvah to do it quickly. Quickly from
when?
From your idea of when the guy's dead.
So generally, halacha doesn't do that, right? Generally, halacha doesn't say, well, you know, shake a little when you're in the mood to do it. We have things that are set, right? That's not a good example. Fair enough. He's assuming there's an objective criteria for this.
Okay?
So let's, for a moment, so brain death is a new thing, right? The fact that you can have a heartbeat continuing without breathing. So you're not going to find anything in Chazal that's necessarily going to address this point directly, right? We all agree about that. Because it didn't exist before, like, the 60s, almost, 50s. So we're going to have to find other sources in Halacha that talk about when you're dead. Luckily, those exist. So let's talk about them. And having discussed the idea of, difference between definition criteria and tests will actually help us understand this, I think, hopefully.
Didn't know until the 50s.
Well, we didn't have a respirator. We didn't have a ventilator. Before you had a ventilator, you couldn't keep the heart beating without breathing.
Didn't have a ventilator?
40s, whatever.
I guess.
Okay. So this is a Gemara, which we saw, but we'll see it again. Did everyone read that?
No.
Better?
Yeah.
And make it a little larger. Okay, so this is a Gemara that talks about Chil Shabbos and Chil Yom Kippur. Okay, when you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, when you're allowed to call Shabbos. So it says, the Mishnah says, well, you know, someone who, a building collapses upon them, and you don't know if he's alive or dead. So what do you do? What's the halacha? You saw some guy in the building, and the building collapsed.
You take apart the building.
You take apart, but he might be dead. You know, it's to save a dead person, but he might be alive, so you go and find him, right? And if he could be saved, you save him, yeah? So the question is, well, how do you know if he's alive or dead? Let's say you're digging, right? So you're digging. If you find that he's alive, so you save his life. If you find that he's dead, so it's Yontif for Shabbos.
Does it have a part of the body you see?
Talk about in a second. But let's assume you find that he's dead, right? You find he's dead, so then you're not, he's A, Mukta, and B, right, a dead body is Mukta, and B, there's nothing for you to do. You're not allowed to bury people on Shabbos. So wait till after Shabbos, then you save him. Okay? Any questions? If he's alive, you save him. If he's dead, you leave him alone. So how do you know if he's alive or dead? Good question. So, Tana Rabbanu. I'm going to stand over here because I can't reach that mess. So Tana Rabbanu. Ad hechan lu bodek. Until where does he check? So you find the body lying there, or right, you're unraveling, you're taking apart you're clearing the rubble, and that's usher on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do it, but if you go nefesh, it's allowed. So how much of the body do you have to uncover before you decide that the guy's dead? Okay, so we should just be aware that today things are very different. Even someone who you find looks completely dead, right, no heartbeat, no breathing at all. You still continue because we have the ability, so we have our notion of reversibility is a little bit different than in times of Chazal because we have the ability to reverse things that were once not reversible. So nowadays you would call 911 and do CPR because we could shock the guy, bring him back. They didn't know how to do that. Okay? So today we would certainly, I don't care what he looks like, you call the EMTs because he might be able to be saved. So Ade Chanu Bode, where do you check until? So it's Machlekes Gemara. So one says ad chotmo, v'yesh omrim ad libo. So what does that mean? Who wants to explain? What does it mean? What does it mean? Ad chotmo or ad libo?
One of them is his heart.
Libo is his heart.
Toes?
Toes, no. What would you be looking for in the, I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? What would you be looking for in his toes?
Blood.
Hmm?
Blood.
What?
Chotmo is brain.
Chotmo is his nose.
What means
what
nose
about
there?
Chotmo. Chotem means,
I mean, I know,
nose.
But like,
what about that? Like breathing?
So, that's all the Gemara says. We'll see the rest of the Gemara in a minute, but let's just figure out what this means. Ad chotmo, check until his nose, you're checking for breathing, we're assuming. And ad libo, you're checking for a heartbeat. Right? That seems at least pasuk shot in the Gemara. Right? That's the thing you do with your nose is you breathe, and the thing you do with your heart is you beat. But, okay, it doesn't really work in English. But you get the idea. Ad chotmo and ad libo. So you're checking. And so one says you uncover his nose. So let's say you're finding him. You're uncovering the rubble. We said not gravel. The rubble. And you find his nose. He's not breathing. So the person who says, ad chotmo, would say, he's not breathing, he's dead. Right? And one person says, well, you have to uncover the heart. If he doesn't have a heartbeat, he's dead. How do we pass an alpha lamaisa? No. So what are we debating here, actually? Let's think about it before we pass him. So we pass in chotmo. Unambiguously, this is how we pass him.
What's chotmo again?
Nose. Chotem means nose.
So his nose is...
And he's not breathing. We're looking for. So what are we debating? What are they debating on chotmo ad libo?
How much do you uncover? How much rubble do you
uncover? No, you're right. How much rubble do you uncover? Yeah. More abstract.
Whether,
are we debating...
The breathing, is that the...
use a word we used before. Are we debating the criteria? We're not really debating a definition. These aren't definitions, these are criteria. So whatever the definition means is probably it's when the soul departs. Okay, that's going to be the definition of death, when the soul departs. Okay, so that's not helpful. So what are the criteria? So are we debating the criteria for death? So if we're debating the criteria for death, that means what?
Stops breathing is dead, yeah.
So this means stops breathing equals death, right? So we're going to be a little bit more fancy, not just stops breathing. We're going to, this is my term, but I'll use it. ICSR means the irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration, right? All the letters are important. Irreversible means it's not reversible, because if it's reversible, then that's a couple of years ago. Cessation means stops of spontaneous respiration, meaning breathing on your own. Because if I take a cadaver, if I take a corpse and put him on the ventilator, he's not alive, right? Yeah? So this person would say it's ICSR, and this person would say it's irreversible.
If you took a cadaver,
cardiac arrest,
and put it on a ventilator, would the body start decaying?
Yeah. It would just have air being pumped in it.
Uh-oh.
It would be a strange decaying body. So if this Gemara is discussing criteria for death, it's clear what we paskin, right? The Rabbi Ben Shachanar, we're talking about paskin chotmo. Okay? We paskin chotmo.
What does
that stand for? ICSR. I'll write that. Irreversible. Cessation.
So we have two criteria?
Was machlokas of spontaneous respiration.
Oh, so it's which one?
Mm-hmm.
Except... Sakalafa is just
breathing. Is chotno. No, I said sakalafa is al chotno.
Whatever that may mean.
Whatever that may mean. If the Gemara is discussing criteria, so that means ICSR. Now, so that's that would be the criteria for death, according to halacha. A brain dead patient is apneic, irreversibly apneic, cannot breathe on his own. This is a big difference. If the criteria for death is ICSR, a brain dead patient is alive or dead.
Dead.
Why?
Dead.
Why alive? He cannot breathe on his own. Right? And meaning, there are a lot more people who can't breathe on their own. They're also dead. But a brain-dead patient is also dead because he suffers from the irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration. He can't breathe on his own.
So, I just always said before, brain-dead people...
They can't breathe on their own.
They can never breathe on their own.
They can never breathe on their own. If the criteria is ICSR, and I don't care about integrated functioning, right? This is a different... That's the bioethical definition. Here the definition is... Let's say it's yes neshama when the soul leaves. So Chazal again tells the criteria. If the criteria is ICSR, right, irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration. Sorry, it doesn't sound like anything, right? Then anyone who's not breathing on their own is dead, right? Who irreversibly can never breathe on their own again is dead. It just so happens to be that brain dead patients can never breathe again on their own. They also happen to be dead. If the criteria is irreversible cardiac arrest, a brain dead patient's heart continues to beat, right? So, would a brain-dead patient be dead or alive, according to Libo?
Alive.
We paskin chotmo. So, if this Gemara is talking about criteria, now, clearly, if I said if this Gemara is talking about criteria, because there's going to be a machlokas. If this Gemara is talking about criteria for death, it's clear that breathing should be the inability to breathe on one's own should be the definition of death. The criteria for death, not definition, the criteria for death. Yes? Questions about that? So, big enough to me now, a brain-dead patient's alive or dead? But according to, if the Gemara is debating criteria for death, then chotmo. But we're assuming that the Gemara is debating criteria. So it's a little late, so we're going to assume we'll get to what the Gemara is debating next time. But yeah.
The Gemara paskins ad chotmo?
The Gemara paskins chotmo. No, I'm sorry. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch paskins chotmo. No one disagrees. No one disagrees that we paskin chotmo. The question is, what does chotmo mean? If the Gemara is debating criteria for death, right, and we pass in chotmo, So that means the criteria for death.
Does the Rambam ever see someone choking and say that that guy's dead?
So what about someone who's choking?
Well, choking, you're
not irreversible.
Or
you might be reversible. What about Christopher Reeve? That's more of a problem. Right, according to this approach, if ICSR is the criteria for death, was Christopher Reeve alive or dead?
He's alive.
He has the irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration. Is he alive or dead? Christopher Reeve.
But he didn't have that, though.
He did. He was spontaneous respiration.
He was still talking.
Yeah, but he couldn't breathe on his own. He had this machine.
He was dead.
Pacing his diaphragm. That's not spontaneous at all.
Well, is it
that's very not spontaneous. It's completely artificial. It was irreversible. He broke his spinal cord.
Okay,
fine.
He's dead.
Right, the problem is that he's talking to you. So now you can say, I don't care.
So then is that going to cremate him?
Maybe. If ICSR is a strict criteria for death, right, why is Christopher Reeve alive?
Like, if someone murdered him, what if he was in the
head? Right, if you shot him in the head. Now he would say, please don't shoot me in the head. I don't know. If this is the criteria for death, you have a big problem. You have to explain why Christopher Reeve was alive, right? I think we're all comfortable saying Christopher Reeve was alive.
I don't know about that.
Okay, that's fair enough. I like to consider him alive because he was talking. Now, as a Rabbi of Life pointed out, how do you know that talking means you're alive in Halacha? I don't know. I thought those were one of the common sense things. But not if we're this smart. If ICSR is a strict criteria for death, this guy meets it.
Can you just say that?
I think he doesn't have to be talking. Here.
It's a rule of thumb, right? Unless he's talking, right? If he's talking, he's not. And if he has a heartbeat?
Okay, so why
talking yes and heartbeat no?
But he had a heartbeat.
No, so let's say a brain dead patient, right? So Christopher Reeve had a heartbeat and he was talking, so he's alive. Because this is true in most cases, just not when he's talking, right? You agree, not when he's talking. And what about when he has a heartbeat? Right, you have to know. Why talking yes, there's a difference, right? Talking and heartbeat. But why one yes and one no? So we'll talk about that next time. This assumes that the Gemara is talking about criteria for death, okay? If this is talking about criteria for death, it's clear how we pass it. You need to know that. I'm stressing that enough. I think that was clear. We're stressing that point. You might be asked about it on Wednesday. Okay? That if you assume that it's about criteria for death, it's an assumption.